He retired from the board in 2009. So he's going to talk about how he felt, you know, as a supervisor with the obvious power shift that it is required to get a county manager in when there was none before. So that should be interesting. It's after all the resolutions. So if you are planning to go to full board tonight, stick around after the resolutions are passed for a fascinating presentation.
So why don't we just explain to people who don't know about what's going on the county level.
Oh, sure.
The County Board of Supervisors is basically deciding whether they're going to move to a county manager, which would be an appointed position.
Yes, and it would be reappointed every 2 years, but it would be the same person. They would just reappoint them.
Well, unless there's a change of majority.
Unless there's a change of majority and they decide not to. We had Board of Supervisors Chairman Roy Brown, our Germantown, on last week. That was last week, right?
Yep.
And he spoke at great length about this county manager process. He's got a committee going that is bipartisan. He's got an independent and a couple of Democrats and a couple of Republicans and the county attorney and the human resources director for the county. And they are fleshing out a job description and a request for proposals that'll go with the job description when they are ready to look for somebody to fill this position. They have budgeted $150,000 for the position, but that doesn't mean, officials say, that doesn't mean that it's going to be a $150,000 position, but we'll see. And he wants to finish this process, I think, by the end of the year and get an RFP out by the summer.
So and for those who don't know what an RFP is, it's a request for proposals.
Yes.
So what else do we have going on? So the Board of Supervisors meeting is at 401 State Street. That's at 7:30 p.m. is when the meeting starts.
Yes. So that should be great.
Let's see.
We've kind of had a slow news week, and my schedule has just switched over. I'm the new Register Star weekend editor, so I've actually been out the last 2 days. So I'm not completely up on the news of the week.
We can talk about school.
Just a moment. Your mic wasn't on. So, let's see. There's
if you want, we can talk about Brown's announcement last Friday.
Oh, right.
If
you
want to get everybody up to speed on that.
So, Chairman Roy Brown announced at the legislative breakfast at the community college, at the Columbia Green Community College.
At 7:30 in the morning.
Indeed, the county was going to go ahead with the purchase of Walmart. Well, not really. The county is purchasing, but the CRC. And that they will be moving the bulk of the county offices to Greenport.
Right. And they would be selling 401 State Street, 610 State Street, the old Aquamic School building on Route 217 in Philmont, the Philmont Nutrition Center, which, if you've ever been to any Human Service Committee meetings for the Board of Supervisors, the Nutrition Center comes up again and again. It's leaking. The roof is falling apart. They need new bread racks, etc. They have a lot of old equipment, so that'll be at least nice for them.
So this is big news. I mean, people have been, there's been a lot of talk about it. There have been a lot of denials and then confirmations and then changes and everything. So it's a big
studies.
Deal. And many, many studies. So this is a big story because the county seat of our county is the city of Hudson.
And if you don't know what a county seat is, it's like the capital of the county.
Right. And yet that will be moving most of the county government agencies out of the city, and of course not very far, but not in the county seat. From what I understand, they'll be keeping just the required agencies that are required to sit in the county seat. Is that correct?
I think so. I'm also something that you need to keep in mind for right now is that this is not solid. Although Roy Brown sounded pretty firm in his decision, and I doubt it's going to be a difficult thing to get through the committee process, it hasn't even come up in any county committee yet. And no resolution has been passed and no vote has been taken. So at this point, it's a plan, a proposal, and nothing more. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to go through easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's something that I wanted to discuss. There's a story in today's Register Star about the city embarking on an energy use audit. Michael O'Hara, who's running for supervisor in the first ward, is going to be the city's. I want to get the title right. Energy manager, and this was a grant that was that actually came from stimulus money, and when the Hudson City Democratic Committee, which I'm the chair of, realized that there was a number of stimulus grants that were about to come due as far as proposals go. The committee started meeting. We had about 30 days to put together a number of proposals, and we worked with the city's grant writers on retainer, and put in three applications for various energy efficiency projects. One was for a solar array at the youth center. One was for an energy manager who would do an audit and work toward energy efficiency on the city level, and what was the other one? And the other one was to do Wi-Fi in all of the city parks. We only got the one, which was for the energy manager. But this is really, I think, going to be a great step forward. What the energy manager is going to do is to do an audit of all of the city buildings, and see where there is room for improvement, which would obviously save money and save energy. But
how old is City Hall? Do you know?
I don't know, actually. No.
I think it's probably older.
Yeah,
right?
I would say at least around 100 years older.
I would think maybe some
perhaps
heat
not as long as that
escapes through its cracks at this point.
Yeah, I mean it's the heat in that building is let's just say uneven. But one of the other things that the energy manager will also be doing is looking toward efficiency. This won't be the first step of it, but looking to improve efficiency for residential people as well. So having Mike O'Hara, who is an expert on this. He works for Sustainable Hudson Valley and has been working on this, on what they call the 10% energy challenge, which is asking homeowners to reduce their consumption by 10% in a year. So he'll be rolling these plans out, and people should be looking as we go forward. There'll be the opportunities for people to come to meetings where they can work toward having their own houses analyzed for energy efficiency with recommendations. And this will be all, I mean, from what I understand, the audits of residential units will be free. So toward the end of the year, I think you'll hear more about it. And certainly as summer comes along, I think that you'll start hearing the first rumblings of what he has planned. And I think that it's really going to be exciting.
How would this be different from, like, the weatherization program that Columbia Opportunities does now?
Well, I hope I'm getting this right, but the weatherization program is income-based. It's also, so it's,
oh, you're right, yeah.
So what the programs that Mr. O'Hara will be working toward will be broader accessibility and won't be needs based as far as I understand.
Oh, so feasibly, if you had bought a great old historic home and you wanted to make it more energy efficient, you could get this kind of consultation.
Absolutely,
maybe?
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that that a number of us who work with city government have been talking about is there's a state program called the PACE program. And what the PACE program allows a municipality to do is to issue a bond, and then homeowners are able to borrow against the bond in order to do energy efficiency upgrades to their facilities, and they pay they pay back the loan by an increase in their taxes until their property tax until the loan is paid back. So for the municipality, there's no risk because they have a lien on the house until the loan is repaid, and for the homeowners, they get to borrow at a very reduced rate. So a lot of what the energy manager will be doing is preparing us for implementing such a program, although that's further down the line.
That is really interesting, actually.
It's one of the great things that state government has done recently is not, and of course there's plenty of things they haven't done right, but that's one of the things they seem to have gotten right.
So what else we got? Last week I found out that in all of 2010, all the supervisors' mileage reimbursements added up to around $17,000-$18,000, but that's not groundbreaking. It's just interesting to see.
What kind of reaction have you gotten to that story?
It was kind of, I think it was a little deflated because of, I mean, I wrote it and it came out Friday morning, and then I was at the legislative breakfast Friday and Roy Brown announced his huge plan to sell the county buildings and move out to the Walmart. So I haven't gotten much of a reaction from it. But it's interesting. It's not only interesting because, I mean, some of the supervisors got upwards of $1,500 for mileage reimbursement for the year. It's interesting more to me because Roy Brown told me, well, when I was a supervisor, when I put in for mileage, you're not allowed to do it twice in a day. You can only go to 401 from your house and go home. But if you have another meeting later and you have to return, you can only bill for one day's worth of commute, one trip. And Roy Brown doesn't have to do this anymore because as chairman, he is a county-issued vehicle, by the way. So I found that 9 of the 16 supervisors who submitted mileage have been charging for 2 trips in a day. So if it's indeed true that you can't do that, a lot of supervisors are still doing it.
I mean, it would...
For some of them, it's like $21 extra, though. Right. So it's... And it's... I mean, I get reimbursed mileage for my job, too, but not to come to work, not to come and file a story. If I go to a town meeting, I get mileage for that, obviously. And I'm not arguing really that they shouldn't get it, but if the rule is there that you can't bill twice in a day for a trip to 401, then you probably shouldn't.
Right. But knowing Columbia County, it's probably not written anywhere, that rule.
They don't have the vehicle use policy that I have, that I believe is the most up-to-date, doesn't have any supervisor-specific rules or restrictions. And it doesn't say very much about logging mileage. It's about a page, 2 pages long.
Right.
But there is actually Bill Hellenbeck, the third ward Hudson supervisor right now, is chairing a subcommittee that is drafting a new policy, and it's a lot bigger. It's like 10 pages to the 2 that are on the books now.
Right. Well, I think that sounds like a great idea. And I know that he's been working on that a long time. So
a long time. I think almost a year.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in about a minute or so. And this is At Issue. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Francesca Olson.
We'll be right back. So we're back, and
this is At Issue with Victor Mandolia and Francesca Olson, if you have just turned your radio on.
And we're here with Peter Meyer. Peter Meyer is a member of the Hudson City School Board, and is going to give us his perspective on what's been going on as far as the budget goes. And we'll also be joined by Andrew Amelinks from the Register Star, who covers the school board for the paper. But
and thank you, Peter Meyer, for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you.
And Victor, Victor asked quite a few board members to come on this morning.
Yeah, so I wanted to let everybody know that we did reach out to other members of the board, Jeff Oddy and Emil Meister and Elizabeth Fout, and none of those were able to attend, but we have Peter here today.
Was I the last asked?
No, I asked you at the same time.
I do have to say that any board member who would come on would have to say the same thing, that I speak only as a member of the board, not for the board, right. And it's a very important caveat,
of course.
Thank you for that. That's important to note, I think. Yeah.
So this is a huge budget. It's a huge portion of the property taxes that people pay in this area as a school budget.
Yeah.
And why don't you give us your perspective on the budget? Sure. And we certainly would like to know why you voted no on the budget.
Generally, I mean, as people should know, a huge budget in this year is about $41 million, which is actually less money than the budget was last year. So in deference to these crisis economic times, it's important to note that the administration has been working hard to try to figure out how to get out of this economic crisis. And the crisis is basically comes in two forms. That's the general economy and the loss of state aid. So our state aid, which Hudson, unlike other districts in not only in the county but in the state, Hudson's very dependent on state aid. About 50% of all of our money comes from the state, and as we all know, if you've been following the news, that budget, state aid budget, was cut to the entire state by $1.5 billion, and in Hudson, it was $1.5 million less this year than last year.
Wow, so 50% is a lot.
50% is a lot, so we get a big hit.
How does that compare to the other districts in the county?
I don't know. I can't tell you. It's based on a very complicated formula, and it's much less, I would guess, than what Hudson gets. But the point is that what we are faced with, and as you all know, the big news was that the board voted on Monday night. And it was a long and lengthy meeting with a great deal of discussion, and I'm sorry Andrew can't make it because he was there and reported it and wrote a great story about it in the paper. But the bottom line here was that the board voted, and I think it was 4-3, but the board voted to pass, to propose to the voters on May 17th the budget, which was which sort of lopped off about 20-25 jobs and raises local property taxes 9.8%. That's a huge hit. And if you've been following the news in the rest of the county, it's double and triple what other districts are raising in terms of their local taxes.
And residents vote on the school budget May 15th, right?
May 17th is the vote. It's a vote we have every year.
And if they don't pass the budget, do you want to just explain briefly how, like, what will happen if the budget doesn't pass?
Explain briefly?
Absolutely nothing, right? It's the same thing, right?
No, but here it's very complicated, and I'll try and simplify it as much as possible. There's a state law that's called contingency budget law. And what that means is that every district is allowed to raise its budget, increase its budget by what the cost of living index was. For the previous year. In this case, it's 1.6%. That means whether the voters like it or not, we, the board, can impose a contingency budget, which would essentially raise the budget by 1.6%. So the numbers of the budget that was passed on Monday reflect what would be a contingency budget, which means, yes, in theory, even if the voters say no, the board can then reconvene, and it has three options. It can say, thank you, voters, for voting. We're going right to contingency, and then simply implement that budget. It can also do, though, it can sit down and say, we heard the voters, and they didn't like it, or, I mean, I'm assuming this is if the voters say no. And the board could then say, we have to redo this. And so there is some meaning in this vote on May 17th, a lot of meaning, because the board has to come back and reconvene after the vote and decide what, what then to do next, whether to lower taxes, cut more people, go right to contingency, or present it to the voters a second time.
And how long, if they do decide to present it to the voters a second time, how long does it take to go up for a vote?
It's roughly about a month. It's about a month later. So there's time to do some reconsiderations. And part of the vote on Monday, which was, I was part of the losing membership, it was 4-3, was to delay the vote that the board took, because we actually had until April 22nd. We continued right to the very end to try and find ways to cut our costs. And it's tough. It's tough to do, and I know a lot of people put in a lot of time trying to do that. I thought we could have done a lot more, and that was my argument. And but I obviously was on the losing side, and this was the budget that the majority of the board decided to present to the public.
So personally, where do you see like the real problems with the budget as it stands?
Well, Emil Meister, board president, was quoted by Andrew in his article as saying we were thrown under the bus. And he was referring to state aid and the economic crisis. But in fact, this gets to your question. In fact, we were thrown under the bus last year because we knew that what saved us last year were federal funds. And we knew that they were temporary. And we knew the economic crisis was continuing. So we were thrown under the bus last year, and the biggest problem is we didn't do enough to get out from under the bus. And I think so the big problem here is government institutions, of which you guys know there's a lot in the county seat. I mean, government institutions traditionally are slow to react. As much as I love democracy, as we all know, it's not quite the same as when you're a business and suddenly your income is reduced. You'd cut costs immediately. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way in government institutions. So we are very slow to react. The second thing is the way we do our budgeting in the school district is a way that assumes money continually rolling in. So we have to change the way we think about how we do our budgeting process. Mm-hmm. And those are big things to do, but you can't do it overnight, as we learn.
So many people believe that that school districts in general but are administration heavy, that there's too much money being spent on the administration level rather than in the classroom. Is that something that you feel is the case in this situation with the school board here?
Not. I mean, it's a much bigger problem than that. It's easy. I mean, you can hear, we've got too many aides, and we've got too many administrators. I mean, in fact, I argued the other night that we really need an assistant principal who's an administrator, to handle the junior high and the intermediate school, because we are now because of these cuts, and because we don't have an assistant principal, and they generally handle discipline problems, that removes principals from doing what they really should be doing, which is being instructional leaders, to make sure, because we have lost in all of this is the fact we have to educate kids. And we haven't been doing a great job of that in the last 10 or 15 years, ever since they instituted statewide testing. Hudson has always struggled. So we are facing enormous challenges now, not just because of the budget cuts, but because what it means in the classroom. I mean, it's a great question, but I really think it's very hard to answer simplistically. I don't mm-hmm. think we're over-administered. I don't think we're over-taught.
Are we over-taxed?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, we're terribly overtaxed. It's a 14.8% is, as I said in the meeting, is just simply unconscionable. And as you know, you have to expand this whole question about the taxing to deal with how local property taxes are assessed. We just hit, and this goes to other governmental problems and how they are so slow to react. The revaluation that Hudson did last year, for instance, it was completely misguided, because it was in the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression. There should have no more been a revaluation of Hudson properties than man in the moon. It was the wrong time, but that's typical of government. Pilots, we're still giving out payments in lieu of taxes. We just did this, the IDA just did this last week. What people don't understand is, though that they are well, though pilots are well intentioned, we want to give businesses a break because they hire people. What we don't understand is that they're an enormous burden on average taxpayers, because we have to pick up, we the regular taxpayer has to pick up the cost of subsidizing that business while it gets up to speed. And then we saw just 2 weeks before that some of the bad problems you can run into in the other end of this with a pilot. The district just had to give $150,000 back to First Niagara, for example, which also had a pilot. So we really have to reassess a lot of the underlying assumptions about the way we do business.
So we're going to take a break again. And when we're back, we will be also joined by Andrew Amelinks from the Register Star, who's been covering the school district. We'll continue this discussion in a moment. Thanks. So we're back, and we're now joined by with Andrew Amelinks from the Register Star.
Hello.
Andrew has been covering the Hudson City School Board for how long? How many years?
4 years.
Wow.
Four plus years.
Four? It seems like much longer.
Yes, indeed it does.
So we, Peter was giving us kind of an overview of the budget situation, and we were wondering if you could just sort of give us your perspective about what's going on with the budget. And
well, it's a sort of I guess the taxpayers are either way are going to end up paying 9.8% tax levy increase, whether they vote for it or not.
Unless I was explaining contingency earlier, and the board can come back and say we got assuming
it can go lower, but
it can go lower. I forgot it can't go higher, but the board could reconvene and say we heard the voters and we're going to cut 25 more people and lower taxes.
Right,
they could.
Because what people should understand though is that if it goes straight, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if they go directly to a contingency budget, it's actually the same budget as what they proposed and went down. Is that correct?
It's the same one that the board just approved,
right.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a 9.8% tax increase, and the
27.2
cuts, but it's roughly 41.2 million or something.
Right.
Before
41,249,180.
Before I got to the studio today, I just did a really quick scan of other school district tax levy increases. Thank you. And the only one I found was the Ichabod Crane Central School District, and I guess they just passed a budget with 3.9% tax levy increase, and they also had a split vote 5-3 with 5 voting yes. So from somebody who does not have a school district to cover, this seems like a very large discrepancy to me. So I was wondering if you could provide some perspective about that.
I can tell you what the district would say. They would say that it's apples and oranges.
Right.
You know,
and that's because of state aid, do you think?
Yeah.
Primarily?
Yeah.
Does Ichabod Crane get less in state aid, so they don't have so much to depend on if it's going to get cut, or...
Go ahead. I already answered that question. So this is a trick.
Oh,
trick
is
question.
It?
See how you answer.
You know, I'm actually not familiar with Ichabod Crane's situation.
That was my answer.
I would never try to trick you, Andrew.
Okay.
So I just wanted to just let everybody know again, this is At Issue. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Francesca Olson.
And we're here with Andrew Amelinx from the Register Star and Peter Meyer, who is a member of the school board in the city of Hudson, or the Hudson City School District. Sorry.
Yeah, we should maybe that would be a good time to tell listeners that we include the Hudson City School District includes not just Hudson, the city of Hudson, but it also includes Livingston, parts of Livingston, Stockport, Greenport and
Taconic.
And Clawbrook, right?
Oh, Clawbrook, excuse me. Yeah. So so it's a fairly, there's approximately 10,000 registered voters in the Hudson City School District.
And how many students?
1,900.
Right.
What is it?
Isn't it 1,900?
About 1,900.
Yeah. Wow.
So you're talking about roughly about $22,000 per student, right? The budget is.
That's right.
Pretty amazing.
Which is, yes.
It's like half of a teacher for every student.
Well, if we handed out $22,000 to each parent, they could probably go to a private school.
So are you for vouchers? Is that your advocacy?
I think it costs about $22,000 to keep an inmate in jail also. Just for comparison. Just
I think that's $100,000. But that's a huge question. And now when you get a budget book, and I recommend everybody drop yourself off at a local school in the next couple months or in the next month, and pick up a budget book because it has all these numbers, which of course will put you to sleep. But that's part of the intent, because at the end of the book, if you get that far, it'll show what we're spending, where it goes to educationally, and it has test score results and that kind of thing, which is sort of gives people actually a chance to answer that question for themselves: Are we getting a good enough bang for our buck, mm-hmm. Educationally?
So, Andrew, did you have anything else that you wanted to add about the budget itself, or
how is this year's budget process different from last year's, for instance?
Louder,
much louder. Yeah. I feel like they, you know, plan to start earlier this year, but I don't think that they actually did.
I was talking about this earlier, and I really think we have to rethink the process. That's, as you know, that's part of my what I've been saying, because we didn't react enough. When Mr. Meister said we got thrown under the bus, I pointed out that we got thrown under the bus last year, and we should have. Part of what my opinion, again, in redoing how we do the budget. I mean, traditionally, the budgets are done when, you know, a superintendent or board finds out how much state aid they're getting and how much, what they call the roll-up, which is all the money that's contractually mandated, and they put those numbers together, and they say, oops, we have a deficit. So there isn't a lot of, we haven't really done a lot of work of what else can we do? Should we close a school? Should we, salary freezes? Should we do salary freezes? Should we cut back busing? I mean, we spend $2 million a year on busing in the school district. So a huge question is how much would we save if we had kids walk to school if they lived within a mile or a mile and a half.
Right.
And there are kids walking to school now,
right.
Which you can see any day at. Like 7:30 and 2:30.
Yeah, Chatham School District just
did that.
So it's, I think it's within a mile.
Mile. I just think we were slow to react. I tried to get the budget process going last July, and I don't know how many of those meetings you attended, but I would ask, has the budget committee met? No, it hasn't met. So we were really slow, and I hope maybe we can this will wake us up a little bit. But
the other districts in the county seem to start a lot earlier in the process, in the year with the process.
So before we take a break, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, just to encourage people. We still are looking for people to run for the board, I think. You can go to the district headquarters and pick up a petition. You'll need 100 signatures. You have to live in the district. And the more people that want to get into this, the better.
How many positions are open and who's?
Three, actually. Three out of the seven.
Wow.
Are open. So we have a terrific chance to change the makeup of the board, or at least to impact it in some way.
And for people who might be interested, you must live in the school district for 1 year prior to the election and collect 100 signatures, and that's all it takes to get on the ballot. And we would encourage people to do that.
And vote on May 17th.
Yes.
So I want to thank Peter Meyer for joining us this morning. We're going to take another break, and then Andrew and Emily from the Register Star will continue to stay on with us, and we'll be right back. And we're back. This is At Issue. We're on WGXE 90.7 from ACRA. We're in the Hudson studio. We're with Andrew Amelinx from the Register Star. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Francesca Olson.
And so, Andrew, you just came from a fire here.
I did.
Yes. I went down to...
still happening.
It's still happening. Wow. I heard the sirens on my way up here. I walked up here from the Register Star.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on with the fire.
It's an apartment building. I think there was four different apartments.
The fire's located
where? The residents.
Where?
I don't actually have the exact address. I'm running back down there after this to report on some more.
It's
right next to Molino's.
Right.
Yes.
It's right next to Molino's Pub.
Is everybody out?
Yes, everybody's out.
Good.
Everybody's apparently unhurt. There's two cats and a lizard still inside.
Oh.
But everyone who lives there has been out.
No word on how that started or anything?
Only rumor and innuendo.
Okay.
So
it usually takes a little while to figure out.
I'll be talking to the police to the police and to the fire.
Do you think they're
departments?
Do you think they're going to be able to save the building, or is it a loss?
It looked like there was a lot of some fire damage, but I think the most damaging thing is the smoke and water damage that seems to.
So Andrew, you're the crime reporter for the Register Star.
Crime and courts, that's right.
Right. So is there anything that's been going on in the past past little bit that you wanted to...
I just returned. Actually, it's been quite a news morning already. I just returned from a preliminary hearing in Greenport Town Court for a man who is alleged to have... abused a one-year-old, so physically abused.
Mm-hmm. So. Is that from Saturday's paper? Man,
yes.
Hit baby four times.
Yes.
Okay.
So that was. That's about all I've done so far today. It's just a fire and a preliminary.
You did only
hearing.
Get in at 9.
Yes.
So, and it's what 10:45.
So there's some. There's been a lot of buzz this week about people running for district attorney and judge and everything like that. Do you have anything that you're hearing or that you wanted to...
I'm hearing things, but nothing's officially confirmed. So I'll probably...
Would you like to announce that you're running for any of those positions?
Yeah, probably not. But,
we know that Judge Jonathan Nichols, Columbia County Supreme Court Judge Jonathan Nichols, is planning to run for, and please stop me if I am wrong when I say this, New York 3rd Judicial District Judge?
Right.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is New York's 3rd Judicial District?
It encompasses a very large area. I think it's 7... counties.
Yeah, I think it's Columbia County, Ulster, maybe not Dutchess, Rensselaer, Albany.
all the way.
A couple of north ones. Yeah.
So that's a big. That's an upgrade from Columbia County Court Judge, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, and one of the things is that most of
Warren counties might be.
Yeah. Most of the counties have a sitting Supreme Court judge, and Columbia County hasn't had one since Judge Connor, I believe.
Right.
And mm-hmm. So.
When was Judge Connor? What year was that?
Gosh, it was before my time.
I want to say 93, although I could be wrong about that. So it's been a while for Columbia. No matter how long ago it was, it's been some time since Columbia County has had a Supreme Court justice. And in general, the counties tended to rotate and have a shot at it each time. There's a lot of wheeling and dealing that goes on when with the nomination of judges, particularly with such a large district. You have to get a number of counties to agree. Well, and
apparently the last maybe two or three judges were all cross-endorsed. So cross-endorsement seems to be a big part of it.
Well, that was in the past, except that in the last couple of years, that has not been the case. In fact, there was a big move for to cross-endorse the Republican sitting justice last time, and the Democrats endorsed Pat McGrath, who then became one. Mm-hmm. So, I happen to be a judicial delegate, so I was part of that, and in fact, it came down to one vote, and Columbia County was united to not cross endorse any longer. Mm-hmm. So that was how that happened. Okay.
So what kind of cases do you see if you're a judge in the 3rd Judicial District of New York State?
Gosh, you're really putting me on the spot. I thought we were going to talk about.
You are the court reporter.
We got an hour, man.
Yeah.
Gotta ask you something.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things is that it's a lot of it is appeals of lower court rulings, and if you look at the Wilson racetrack and the absentee ballot issues, they all wound up in those courts. Although they often start at the lower court and then get appealed to the to the Supreme Court.
Okay. Well, thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
So. We're going to take one more break, and we'll be right back to close out the show. This is At Issue on WGXE. And we're back. This is Victor Mandolia.
And this is Francesca Olson.
And this is At Issue. We're at WGXE 90.7, broadcasting from ACRA. And we're at the Hudson Studio, which is on 7th Street Park in the city of Hudson.
And if you're just tuning in this morning, we had a lively discussion with Hudson City School Board member Peter Meyer, and then Crime and Courts reporter / Hudson City School District reporter Andrew Immeling stopped by.
And we want to thank Andrew, who's now back out to do more reporting.
Yes, poor Andrew is in the middle of covering a fire that's just down the street from the studio. So that obviously takes precedence.
So there's a lot of rumors going around about courts and judges
and nominations in general, I think.
And nominations.
It's not even summer yet.
I've been hearing that Judge Chaika is perhaps interested in.
Judge Paul Chaika, Columbia County Supreme Court?
That's right.
Okay.
That was Columbia County Court.
Okay. Supreme Court. Oh, really? Not Supreme
although
Court.
Although I think he sometimes is the acting Supreme Court All Justice. Right. But that Judge Chaika is perhaps interested in district attorney, which would be extremely interesting.
If that were true, it would be interesting because Greg Finger, the chairman of the County Republican Party, did email me a few weeks ago after we did our first show together, actually, to say, no, you were wrong. Beth Cozzolino is running for DA. I think that we said that we had heard she hadn't, or she had decided not to, but I guess she has definitely expressed interest in running for her position.
Right. We also heard that she was perhaps interested in running for Supreme Court as well. So it's it'll be interesting to see where District Attorney Cozzolino winds up in this election, because it's there are rumors all over the place what she intends to do and what the Republicans intend to do about both judges. Now, if it were true that Judge Chaika would be seeking the district attorney's office, then it would be that we'd have potentially two vacancies on the on county court.
Oh, wow.
So it's a big deal since Judge Nichols is going to be pursuing the Supreme Court.
And I haven't heard of anyone who has expressed firm interest or even semi-firm interest in running for a Columbia County court judge position.
Well, so there's certainly mechanizations going on in the background. I think there's, you know, it's a coveted position, and it's extremely long term. I think it's a 14-year term.
Wow,
could be wrong about that, but it's a very long term, mainly to eliminate the influence of politics in judges. So, excuse my phone. I should have had it on silence. So that's all interesting. We have
I think judge elections and campaigns are really interesting because you can't be as political or as partisan as you could be if you were a candidate for supervisor or assemblyman or any kind of position like that. Judges, I mean, you can't say, I promise to uphold Republican ideals while I'm a judge. Like, that's not, you know, that's obviously not going to get you elected. And it depends
on the area. and they have a very small window. I think they're only allowed to be involved in any type of political activity. They can't even attend a fundraiser or anything like that.
That's got to be very difficult. You're campaigning, but you can't
absolutely
be campaigning in the same fashion that everybody else is. That seems like it would be a really complicated thing to think about and act on
absolutely
as a candidate.
You have to. They give them, I think, 6 months on either side of the election in order to that they are able to be involved in any type of politics, and then they have to completely refrain.
Wow.
Any time after that, so it's
the Register Star does these. We obviously do interviews with all the major candidates from supervisor up, but for everybody who is running for town board or a town court seat or anything like that. Town justice, I should say. We have like a candidate questionnaire to fill out, and the ones that we get back from the judges are usually like, well, what do you hope to accomplish in your tenure if you win? They can only write, you know, to judge effectively and impartially.
Right.
And so that's really hard. I think that's really hard for somebody.
Any other things going on that people should know about?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I'll reiterate this. I said this at the beginning of the show, but if you're just tuning in, tonight is full board, which is my favorite night of the
whole
month.
That's the Board of Supervisors, yes. Cumberland County Board of Supervisors.
And they all get together and they pass all the resolutions that have gone through all their committees in March. And tonight there is going to be a special presentation after the resolutions go through. The Seneca County Manager, Suzanne Sinclair, will be there, and she'll talk about Seneca County's shift to a county manager. So that should be very interesting, and I know she's going to be answering questions from the supervisors, but I don't know if she's going to take questions from the public.
Seneca County is a county that is similar in size to to Columbia County, and
they also have a board of supervisors,
right? So they've asked her to be a an information source for supervisors who will be considering moving to a county manager's model with a board of supervisors. Right now, in Columbia County, the board of supervisors functions as the serving all of the executive duties of running the government, and so there's a move to having a county manager, which would so that there would be one central point where decisions would be made concerning really basically the running of the government, have it basically a CEO of the government, and so the board will be hearing from this Seneca County manager, and who will be relaying her experiences with what works and what doesn't work, what are problems, and so I think it should be a very interesting discussion. This is a series of discussions that Chairman Brown has been having.
Yes, he had a couple of months ago at full board. He had Jerry Benjamin, who is a dean of political science, I believe, at SUNY New Paltz, and was a huge part of writing the Ulster County Charter that provided for their county executive, and he spoke to the committee Roy Brown has formed on this. But he came, and Dan Frank, who was interim county administrator in Greene County, came too, and they sat and they spoke at the full board, and I came in on the end of that. You were there, mm-hmm. for that presentation. Yep. The supervisors didn't ask that many questions, so I'm hoping that they ask some questions tonight. I think it's always nice to have a good dialogue going when,
well, hopefully
kind of
some
happens.
Of what they said that time sunk in, and they're and they have will have some questions prepared.
Yes, that was like the first time this topic has been taken a full board to be presented to all of them at once. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they just didn't have a lot of time to consider what they might ask.
So what do you think the chances of this happening are? I mean,
I think there are pretty good chances of this happening, but I think that the economy has to be a huge consideration, especially since they've budgeted $150,000 for the position. They may not pay that, but still, to attract talent, to attract somebody who can do the job, you're going to need to pay pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go to public referendum. I think if it did go to public referendum, it might lose.
Right.
But it's not going to. The supervisors are going to vote on it. And I think it has a pretty good chance of going through. Roy Brown has been very fastidious in his research and in the forming of this committee. The committee has representatives from all political parties, even Edna Bosny, who is an Independence Party member,
right.
Which is interesting. And even
two members of the public, or three members of the public as well, I believe.
Yeah, there are. So there's Ed Harrington and right. Tony Cashin.
And George Rodenhausen. Tony Cashin is an independent, not an Independence Party member,
but
NOP,
okay.
Which stands for no party.
And George Rodenhausen is a Democrat, and Ed Harrington is a Republican.
Right. So there really has been an attempt by Chairman Brown to hear from all sides on the issue. It should be just to explain what Francesca said. She said this won't go to a public referendum. If the proposal was to create a county executive, which would be elected by the public, that it would require a referendum.
And I think that a county executive would be elected additionally.
And
so you'd get to vote for him.
Right. So and many people believe that would be the better model, but some see this as a step in the right direction.
The thing with a county executive, I started going to these county manager committee meetings pretty early on. Brad Fitzsimmons, the county attorney, said something like, if you are going to have a county executive, you need to rewrite your county charter, and his position needs to roll with the rest of the supervisor's term limits. Mm-hmm. So he could only be elected every 2 years. And they didn't want that. They didn't find that to be a favorable thing to attract somebody to want to do it, because I mean, you win and then 2 years later you're out, and how much change or policy change can you really do?
Right, but then they also discovered that the law would require that a county manager would only be able to be for two years. So that sort of beat that down.
Yeah.
So, first of all, we want to say thank you for listening. And
yes, and thank you to Peter Meyer and Andrew Amelinks of the Register Star. Peter Meyer's from the Hudson City School Board. They both came on. We appreciate it a lot.
We on the Wednesday the 27th, we still have Ken Flood.
Yes, we are going to have Commissioner of Planning and Economic Development for Columbia County, Ken Flood, to come on, and he's going to talk about county progress, economic development plans for the county in the next couple of years. He's trying to get himself out to the public to actually talk about these things, so I'm excited to hear from him.
So again, thanks for listening. This is WGXC At Issue. We'll be back next week on Wednesday at 10 a.m., and we're looking forward to talking with you again. See you soon.